Hello, welcome to the big show. Yes, if you've listened to last week's show, then you've done well because I only published it a few hours ago and it was 2.25 hours long. It was a hell of a show. Not that I remember much of it. And you'll guess from the title of it that I do regret it, and we won't be doing that frequently. We've actually had a review about last week's show from Chris, and Chris has put, absolutely no idea what I've just watched for the last 2 hours, but it was splash your pants funny. I only wish the pre-show had been recorded too, as the watch, listen later folk missed a classic BTN production. My recommendation would be to watch and play along with the Withnail and I-style drinking game every time you see someone on the panel drink to get the best out of this one. Thank you to Wrighty, Wheaters, Lee, Kelly, Jeff and Ewan for whatever that was I just watched.
Good man.
That's awesome.
It's a rather random show. It's in two parts, so make sure you listen to them in the right order. And we had some fun stuff.
Do you think it matters to listen to them in the right order?
There is the BTN correct order, and then there is BTN machete order. And if you, and if you listen to the podcast, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I had loads of fun last week. It was great. I did put in the post, I think it's going to be a bit of a Marmite podcast. So some will love it and some will hate it. But there you go. Surprisingly as well, the person that swore the most, Wrighty, was you.
Apparently so, and I do apologise.
No, it's okay. You started us off in about a third of a second in with the first expletive. and then that was it. We were off and running after that. And then it's after 20 minutes, there was no swearing. And the more drunk we got, the less we swore.
Good boys.
It was good. I did a review today on the Max show, which did say, my only criticism about BTN is that Ewan swears a bit too much. Which I do. But the one thing I would say to that, and I did say to this during the Max show, we don't pretend to be anything that we aren't. We are mates down the pub, and with mates down the pub, you take what you get, and sometimes if we've had a drink, it might get a bit raucous. There is some episodes of the Gamer Show where they haven't sworn once through it, but I would never let Ellis listen to the content of it, because it's completely inappropriate. So, I mean, I see a swear word a lot different from the content that's covered in it. And we've had some horrific content in this. I do agree. Batwinch has said bollocks to that. Thanks, mate. The Week in Tech, joining me to discuss The Week in Tech. What a brilliant panel we got ahead of us. Starts off top left. It looks like it's colder, dude. You're wearing a few layers. Chris Ashley.
Yes, it's the weather is definitely dropping up here. But I got sunshine.
It's either that or you pulled on your Jedi cape in anticipation of next week.
Well, look, I'm actually driving to Florida for Christmas this year. So I've got, you know, although I've grown up in this area and had snow and it's part of my life and I enjoy it. You know, every once in a while, it's kind of cool to get away and see some warmth during this time of the year while everybody else is suffering. So I'll take the good.
And you're driving. How long is that going to take?
About 16 hours. I usually leave about 2 o'clock in the morning. And that way my wife and my child are sleeping and, I can do just drive. I don't have to answer questions. I don't have to be nagged to death. No, my wife's great.
There's a good one there in punctuation. Cause that makes it sound like you've actually left the house and left them sleeping. You haven't told her that you're going down there by yourself.
It's like, oh, you weren't in the car when I left? My bad.
I wondered why.
I leave about 2 o'clock in the morning, and the cool thing about it is, you're kind of tired when you first start out, but the adrenaline's kicking in. But by the time the sun starts to come up, it really wakes you up when the sun comes up, and you're already about 8 hours into the drive, and then you just power through the next five, and then after that.
Is that the adrenaline of realizing that you've got to hold a conversation with your wife for 16 hours?
Well, fortunately, they are very good sleepers, so I probably won't see them till about 10 o'clock.
So you've only got, that's good. So you've only got 8 hours to talk.
Yeah. But she's good. So it's going to be fun, but excited to be back on here. Sorry for being late. I don't know why Skype was giving me trouble, but we in here now.
Next to him is a man you could hold a conversation with all day without repetition, hesitation, or the other thing, Jeff Gamet.
And the other thing, I'm assuming, does not mean a drink.
Hesitation, repetition. Come on, fellas, what's the other one?
God knows.
It's, come on, that's just a minute, isn't it? What you been up to?
If only we had some tool that let us search the internet to sort that out.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have got quick enough for it to be funny. Jeff, how you been, mate?
I am doing all right, and it's so awesome to be here, and this is great. It's like my own little personal Friday party.
Hesitation, repetition, and deviation. Thank you, Batwench. Deviation, there we go.
I can be kind of deviant.
Oh, we should do a tech just a minute. Just a petabyte. How about that? A new show, just a petabyte. Next to him, it's Alan. We haven't seen you in forever, mate. It just schedules not collided, and
yeah, I had to say no to about 4 invites. I'm so sorry. It was just crazy period. Obviously, there was
based children. On last week's show, mate. You got off light.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. No, so you know, there's just a lot going on at the moment. Just about got out from underneath all of the children in need appeal stuff and things, and that was good. That at peak, we took almost £2 million in an hour through the site, so successfully.
I've had working days like that, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, and now we got to line it up for ITV Tech Santa next Friday.
Oh, that's got naff written all over it.
Yeah, it's not quite the same scale as Children in Need Red Nose Day, but you know, we love all our children equally.
It's not got the same class as Children in Need, but it's off the naff scale. it's like your next door neighbour buys every flashing light in Wilco.
Yeah. But it is Christmas, so it's supposed to be naff, isn't it?
Yeah, no, every time I come home, that frigging chihuahua sitting out the front just drives me mental.
That's a chihuahua?
No,
I saw the photo.
It's a reindeer, but it's the size of a chihuahua, and it's got big ears, so it'll do. I'll call it the chihuahua because I hate it.
All right.
She managed to, as well, to pull another blinder this week, which was when I came home on Wednesday. There was a toilet seat cover with Santa on it.
Right.
Which I have got my own back. I've got my own back because the problem is now she's got the toilet seat cover on the back bit. When you fold it up against the cistern, it doesn't stay there, and the front one falls down. So I've pissed on it a couple of times.
Well, you're just marking your territory.
No, I'm not. I'm just like, it falls forward, psh, you put it there. Don't tell her I said that, for Christ's sake. last but by no means least, my partner in crime last week, the Vineyard of Norwich, Righty Boy.
Oh, mate, they'll tell tales of legend of our show last week.
It was...
Children in 200 years will talk of that show.
And it'll
stay. Pylons are already writing ballads.
There'll be murals on cathedral ceilings of Ewan and cider and whiskey and me and wine. But we had a good time, didn't we?
We did. We had a great time, I think. Muller is tweeting out. He says, Paulhams is now Mr. Sweary. Muller is actually driving to Norwich. And I did say to him, send me a...
Jesus Christ, no!
Yes, he's on his way, mate. He'll be there in a minute.
Jesus!
So I did say to him, send me a glimpse and periodically through the show we'll look at his progress.
Awesome.
And then the police can use that in a trial for his speeding offence.
he's in Norwich. I'm moving.
Is this just because he heard that, you know, Miley Cyrus said it was a great place?
You're joking, did she?
Oh, there was something about being awarded International Artist last night, or the night before, whenever it was. Apparently, she specifically mentioned Norwich.
Well, she got her inspiration from Norwich.
But she did a concert there, I believe. So, you know, it's Paul's moment of glory. Yes.
Blimey, Miley Cyrus loves Norwich. There we go, we have a show title.
Well, that's something.
No, apparently it's his mum's 80th birthday, so happy birthday, Mrs. Lowe. I hope it's a wonderful time for you, and you're not too bummed that Stephen's going to be there. right, if you're watching, come on, Muller, send us a glimpse so we can stick you on on the screen. The Week in Tech, who's got the first story, who's going to kick us off and take us through the massive stories that have occurred this week? First in the chat room.
Well, Paul.
It's righty boy.
Well, I want to chat about, it's a new thing, but it's a question as well for you guys. So, I'll have to back things up, and even though I'm a Mac kind of guy, I use OneDrive for everything that I do. And I pay OneDrive a pitiful 49 pence a month for a little bit of extra storage. But last month they said, because a lot of people use OneDrive and Dropbox and all that, there are a lot of free users. And you get 15 gigs from OneDrive, but last month they're going to reduce that to 5. And that got a bit of an uproar. So 70,000 people signed a little bit of a petition on Microsoft's feedback site. And Microsoft have done what they always do, is done a bit of a U-turn. And they've said, okay, we're not going to reduce it to 5, we're going to keep it at 15, but you've got to opt in, which is great. You know, I'm happy to opt in and all that sort of thing. But if you don't opt in, you lose it. So a lot of people who've got their data that's stored up on the cloud and everything, they're going to lose it. And they've also turned around and said, if you're a 365 subscriber, you're going to lose unlimited storage, and it's going to go back to a terabyte. So they're kind of dumbing down on what they're offering. And I just thought, this is where the question is how much do you guys have your faith in the cloud stuff for backing up? Because this week as well, Dropbox announced that Mailbox was going away, which is the email client, which I've heavily relied on my iPad and my iPhone, which is, it was released, I think, in 2013, and it's a brilliant email app that you can tell emails to go away and come back another day and all that sort of thing. And the kind of free market of apps and storage and all that sort of thing that a lot of people kind of rely on don't really understand that those sort of things the rugs are going to be pulled out from underneath them. And I just wondered, is our data really safe with these companies anymore?
I remember on this very show about a year ago, maybe a little bit more actually, might be 2 years ago, saying that the cloud was a pile of bollocks and you don't want to get into it. And I was told that it's a wave that's coming and I was effectively being King Canute. And I got to say, I sit vindicated, I think, in what's gone on in the cloud in the last 2 years with lost data, lost photos, closing down of services and loss of data through that, of saying the cloud is something you don't want to touch with a barge pole. I have in this office 42 terabytes of storage, and I have duplicated drives that I spend a lot of time using ChronoSync to back up, and they get locked away in a safe, and one comes home with me. So I've got in two locations, and I don't want anything in the cloud unless it's my wife's PTA newsletter that I couldn't give a stuff about because I could start again if I really needed to. I think the cloud is the king's new clothes.
I think before we declare that for you, as much as I'd like to give that one to you, we should make a couple of things clear about the different cloud services, right? Because what OneDrive gives you and what Google Drive and Apple's storage, that's not a backup system, and we shouldn't necessarily consider that a backup system, because essentially OneDrive replicates data from one system to the next. Now, they do have some measure of backup in it where you can retrieve a version of a file that was deleted, but that's not a true backup system. Now, for a cloud-based backup system, you think about things like CrashPlan, okay? That is a remote service in the cloud. They have an agent that runs on your particular machine that takes actual data, backs it up to as a backup to their cloud service. That's a different story. And, they have better recovery type things for that. OneDrive, to me, is a convenience thing that I absolutely love. And that's why it really bummed me out when Microsoft changed the way the service was running. And I'm glad they're listening and realizing they made a mistake there, because there's nothing better for me. Like, for example, I just got my new Windows Surface Book. I took my Surface Book, I logged into it, logged into OneDrive, and within 30 seconds all my files that I normally have on my computer was already downloading to my computer because of OneDrive. So that type of thing to me, or if I take a file and I save it and I'm like, oh man, you know, I switch computers or I'm on my phone and I want to get a particular picture. OneDrive keeps all of that in sync between my devices, and that piece of it alone is the major use case for me. And then, of course, if I lose a computer, I still have my stuff up there as a means of backup. But, you know, as you were just describing, when we do backups, you need to do it multiple ways. You should have a local copy of the backup. That's the fastest way to recover if you have a drive that you save to. But you should also have a copy of your files off-premise. So I wanted to clarify, you know, what OneDrive is in the means of backups and stuff like that. Now, with that being said, if you look at what Microsoft was saying, somebody bit off more than they can chew with the way they offered the service. Now, that's not our fault. So give us what you offered. But I still don't, I'm not on the camp yet that the cloud services are a bad thing, because, you know, whether you like it or not, everything is continuing to move that direction. I mean, Amazon offers a server. All the majors, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, Google, they're all offering services. And even Amazon's in the enterprise side of cloud service offerings. So that's not going anywhere. They didn't invest all that money for it to just disappear.
How many of those providers offer you, when you sign up for it, a disclaimer or a warning which very boldly says, we are offering a service for storage, we are not backing these files up, and you should always make sure you have local back copies as well? And the answer is none.
No.
There might be the small print, but it's not prominent. It's not getting the average Joe and Joanne to think about, hang on, this is a convenience service, this is not a storage service. Because it's all badged as cloud storage.
Yeah, you are right. There is a danger that people will, you know, consider, right, okay, well, I've got my stuff syncing up into the cloud. That is a full replacement for backup. You know, so I've got my local copy and I've got the cloud copy.
You're selling to people who don't even understand the word backup.
No.
That's my point.
But that's right. The thing. Okay, a lot of people, though, to be honest, they're actually in a better situation because they wouldn't have done backup at all anyway, and at least they now have two copies of their files. It's not proper backup because it's not got multiple versions and stuff like, you know, crash plan, like Carbonite and stuff. But when you were talking about the large sizes that they were offered, it was this interesting one of, yeah, Microsoft offered unlimited storage for the, you know, Office 365 people. I was well on my way to taking advantage of that. I've currently got 1.3 terabytes up in my OneDrive. So I'm actually over the threshold that they've reduced things down to. I can kind of see Microsoft's point. They are not Dropbox. Their primary business is not being in the storage game. However, yeah, some marketing numpty decided, oh, hang on, unlimited cloud storage sounds great, and we're Microsoft, so of course we can manage that, can't we? But no, they do actually want you to use OneDrive as your place for your documents, not your place for every single thing that's filled every nook and cranny of your however many terabytes hard disk.
But when you go to Windows 10, Windows 10 really kind of hammers you in saying OneDrive is, you know, you should use OneDrive. You should use OneDrive for your files. And, you know, like Ewan says, he's got a backup. He's got offsite backup server. I have got a NAS in the house where I back up things to. I'm not just relying on OneDrive to back up my files. But we're talking about, like, normal people who just get a pop-up from Microsoft when they've upgraded to Windows 10. And it says, you know, put your files here. And they think that is their backup. And 15 gig is very generous as a backup, but if they don't opt in now, they could possibly lose, if they had a drive failure or anything like that, they could possibly lose a lot of the important data that they thought was being backed up.
I think there's an important distinction here.
As I say, you're completely right that, you know, this one they've now announced is a opt-in, if you want to keep it. I've shoved the URL in the chat room, and you have to opt in before 31st of January. It's a couple of clicks to opt in, so not difficult. And that will preserve your 15 gig of free storage, plus if you're using any sort of camera backup, it will preserve the extra 15 gig they gave you, so you can have 30 gig free in OneDrive. If you're a OneDrive, an Office 365 customer using more than 1 terabyte, you've got a year to get back down under 1 terabyte. Similarly, if you don't take advantage of this deal to opt in to keep your storage, when you're reduced down to 5 gig, your OneDrive will become read-only. So you won't lose the files that are already in OneDrive, but you won't be able to put any more up. And obviously, it's how Microsoft communicates that so that people don't think their latest files are still going up and syncing.
So what are you going to, Alan, you're over a terabyte. What are you going to do in the next 12 months to get down? Are you going to move it somewhere else, or are you done with OneDrive?
Well, no, actually, I've got the Office 365 family plan, because it's not much more than the single personal, and the home plan is actually 5 users. So actually, I'm just going to shove the 0.3 terabytes across on a second user, because effectively the home plan gives me 5 pots of 1 terabyte now instead of 5 pots of 10 terabytes. So yeah. I'm just going to move it to a secondary user.
Jeff, you had a point.
Oh, right. We're talking about people upload their files to services like OneDrive and then think that their files are backed up. And I don't think that's correct. My guess is that the majority of people aren't looking at services like OneDrive and thinking, oh, my files are backed up. They're looking at these services and thinking my files are safe. And that's not the same thing. Most people, I think, are not even considering backups at all. Mm. They're just thinking my files are safe. And that's something that companies need to make clear. They need to make a distinction for us, for the average user, so that they understand the difference between a file is safe and a file is backed up and a file is never truly safe.
Have you guys ever heard of the Windows tax?
The Windows tax.
Yeah.
The old one on properties.
Yes. So in the Victorian period, they came up with this idea, which was like a community charge or a poll tax or a council tax. And it was very clever because it said, right, you pay tax based on the numbers of windows that you have. Ergo, if you've got a bigger house, you've got more windows. If you've got a smaller house, you've got less windows.
Wow.
That actually works. That works pretty well. And if you go along a lot of industrial areas, you'll find loads of ornate brickwork. And then you'll find those lovely circular holes, but they're all bricked up. And that's because they built those just before the Windows tax was announced. And they thought, stuff this, so we'll brick them up. So they've got lovely ornate architecture, but actually there's just bricks behind. So they were building Crystal Palace at the time that they introduced the Windows tax. And someone said, hang on a minute, we're building an entire frigging building out of glass. What are we going to do about when the Windows tax comes in? And in the end, they had to put an exemption in the Windows tax just so that they could build Crystal Palace. And I think that this is exactly like that. Because you get someone comes along, like Yahoo, and goes, wow, here you go, Flickr, 1 terabyte of storage, free to everyone. You, hey, and you fill your boots and you shove all your photos up there. And you haven't got your cards anymore. You haven't kept a local backup because they're safe, as Jeff says, up in the cloud. And then they go, well, actually, we're selling ourselves off now and Flickr's going to be sold. And the firm that comes along afterwards is going to probably say, listen, awfully sorry, but you can go back to 15 gig. You've now got an immense amount of data. You have something to do with. And you've been effectively, you've decided to build Crystal Palace and then they've introduced the Windows tax.
I agree with your analogy to an extent. But there's one thing that we have a problem with. And it bugs me. We all sign up for free services. And when I say free all, I mean, you know, people using tech. We sign up for free services and then we get mad when the free services go away or the terms change. It's like, guys, this is a free service that a company's offering you. You have to expect that at some point they may change the way it works. And, you know, unfortunately, that's not the primary mindset for folks, because all of this stuff is still relatively new and so many people are getting into these things, and I get it. But we really need to start preaching to folks. If you use something for free, you are subject to their rule. You know, I pay for Office 365, you know, and so I have extra storage already. Just really didn't, the change didn't really affect me. I have extra storage. I control my own email. I don't have to worry about, you know, ads or none of that stuff. You know what I mean? But, you know, our mindset is we're owed this free service that you offered us, and then you have to give it to us this particular way. And I disagree with that.
Oh, I think you look at Apple stands, every time Tim Cook stands up on stage and goes, Apple cares about photos, dude. And you just think, no, you don't. You've got a history of not giving a toss about photos. The number of services that you have provided and then closed, and people have been scrabbling around to try and save their photos. Don't give me any, you've got to be photo friendly for the next 10 years before I categorize you as a photo lover, mate. I promise you. And that's now, the
with
problem.
Apple, I think there's a problem here, which isn't that they don't care. I think they do care. I think Apple's just pretty much incompetent when it comes to cloud services. It doesn't matter what they do. Oh. They just can't get it right.
No, they are. They're incompetent. That's overselling it as well.
I definitely think it's up to us as tech folks that are preaching to other people is to constantly remind them. Same thing with the constantly remind people that free can change. And, you know, and it's also up to us to speak to the right of people we support.
No. Cost can change as well. That's the trouble. There's plenty of places out there are charging you services and it changes.
Yeah,
and it goes,
definitely that can happen.
It goes down. The fee goes down, fair enough, but we reserve the right to change the fee and change the service when the hell we like. And, okay, but I haven't got my photos. I didn't realize it was closing. I didn't get the email. What do I do now?
That definitely can happen. But those folks, I think, are in a better position to complain and, you know, and when that happens, as opposed to somebody who's just taking advantage of a free service. Yeah, just like when somebody gets a phone on subsidy, which you guys don't do so much out there, but it's big out here still. You know, people buy phones on subsidies, and they want to complain when, you know, when the contract's not up. It's like, look, you bought the phone on subsidy, you're stuck with it.
That's a bit eyes wide open. That's not quite the same as changing the service midway through what you purchased, which they do.
Yeah, I mean, but
which is do.
It hasn't changed that much, but you know, it's still early on in this game, so that's why I said I can't give you that victory yet. You know, you got to stop the dance and, you know, get out the end zone.
Go on, Ronnie.
So, like I say, I came here with the question as well about storage in general, and I have a MacBook here, I have an iMac here, I have an iPhone, and I now have a iMac at work. And for the first time, I've seen the warning, you have not got enough free storage with Apple. Do you want to upgrade? And there's several, $79 a month for 200 gigs and 299 for a terabyte and all that sort of thing. Do I sign up for this, or do I just say I put it somewhere else? I know it's not the Mac show, but...
No, I have nothing in the cloud that I care about, and that's the way.
So you don't pay Apple for any sort of backup.
I don't care what the service is. I put nothing in the cloud that I care about, and I certainly put none of my commercial work online, because then it's gone forever.
Yeah, that's my whole point. We just can't rely on these ever. You know, like with Mailbox, with Dropbox. You know, that was my favorite email app. I just did everything in that. And I think in late February, I'm going to lose it. And I'm going to lose the best email app I ever had. And I've got to change the way that I work. And it is, certainly with the free, you can never, ever rely on them to be around. And even with the paid, you can't rely on them to ever be around, can you?
No. I mean, that's the rest. Don't take me because I'm a humbug.
I mean, an interesting one I've sort of hearing a few times recently was this one of a little while ago, sort of people were saying, right, okay, well, you know, all this cloud stuff works best if you centralize and put all your stuff sort of in one location, choose your ecosystem and go with that sort of thing. However, more recently, I've been hearing a lot more people saying, well, actually, I want to spread my things and not put all my eggs in one basket. And actually, if I'm doing either free or I'm paying for it, do you actually want to think about what is this service that I'm getting from this company a core service for them? Because if it's not a core service, like a mail client for Dropbox, then it's quite likely it could go away. So, you know, if you want a music service, are you better, you know, going with an Apple Music or a Google Music or a thing? Or what about, you know, Spotify? You know, if Spotify goes away, it's because Spotify has gone away. It's not because the company has decided to refocus.
And it's subscription-based and you're not getting charged anymore.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everything's subscription. Yeah,
and you never owned it in the first place. Whereas when you buy a track on iTunes, although you're only licensing that track and it does go away, it could go away, you do feel like you own it and you're owed something by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why subscription services are so popular, in that, you know, it reduces the risk of not having a physical item, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because you go, oh, well, if it goes away, well, fine. You know, as long as I made use of it while I was paying for it, I'll look for the next thing, and probably the price of the next thing is lower than the previous thing because prices go down.
As long as they don't charge you for a year up front, I don't have a problem with subscription. If it's month by month, I think that's fair.
But, to Paul's question, should he trust, and how much should he trust, you know, Apple with his storage? I do hear a lot of people saying Apple is great at hardware. It's, you know, okay at software, although has its moments, but is kind of terrible at cloud.
I think you will get the most hardened fanboy to say that Apple is terrible at cloud.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. Yeah.
Even Doc Rock would say that Apple is crap at cloud.
Yeah.
I think the reality is that we have to kind of, and we should probably start really coming up with levels of how... of type of storage people need, you know, even though, like I said, doing the backups on the with OneDrive and Google Drive or whatever, it's better than nothing. You know what I mean? Then you get in, you know, to, you know, getting your Western Digital drives and making sure you have some hardcore backups. Then you get into, you know, the next level, which is getting getting things like crash plan and so on and so forth. I think
a lot of those are useless as well, Chris.
But sorry?
A lot of those are useless. I had Carbonite, and in a year, it never backed up my laptop.
Oh, I use CrashPlan. I've used CrashPlan for 3-4 years now and haven't had a single issue and have had multiple recoveries from it. So it's been great for me.
I've got to admit, I might be slightly different because I had 2 1-terabyte solid-state drives in my MacBook Pro. But in a year of being connected to the internet, it never backed up everything that was in there. It never did one whole drive.
Oh, that's terrible.
Wow.
In a year.
CrashPlan's been great.
And there's the thing is, I'd like bring my laptop home and I'd plug it in. I'd be like, I wanted a button that go, look, Carbonite, fill your boots. And it would just go, vroom, and that would be it during the night. But never did. It was always just like, oh, trickle, trickle, trickle. 2 terabytes is not going to trickle to the cloud in a year. And I'd have suggested that actually some people with 500 megabyte drives probably didn't get up into the cloud in 6 months. So, let alone my thing. If you're sitting there going, Alan, thanks for putting the link to about opt-in into the chat room, but I wasn't listening live. How the hell am I going to click it? Yeah, bugger. The answer is go to britishnetwork.com/chat and then navigate to the 11th of December and you'll see a whole transcript of everything that's been typed in the chat room. There's people sucking breath in at the moment going, holy crap, I wouldn't have typed that then.
Oh, so that means that the Legend of Zelda porn that I dropped into the chat, everyone can get?
Everyone can get that.
Exactly. And I've been looking for that OneDrive link all bloody days. Thank you, Alan.
There we go.
That's all right.
So if you want to opt in, If you're not in and clicked Alan's link, then go back and scroll. The time was about 8:35, so you'll find it there, and you can click on it. So go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and you can look at the show notes, in effect, all of the links that we've got, all of the stories that we do, all the cool things that we do, they all go in the chat room. So just go to the relevant day. There's a fair old bit to scroll through because we've done two shows in one day. And actually, another announcement coming from January onwards, we're going to be doing the Mac show and the Big show on a Thursday night. So the Mac will be from 7 till 9, and then the Big show will be from 9 till 11. So I hope that's okay with everyone. But we've asked plenty of people, and there's quite a few have said yes instantly. That would work for them better. And I think we'll get more live viewers as well, which would be nice. So. So from January, first Thursday that we're all back, I think it's the 7th or something like that, then we'll all be, 6th or 7th, we'll be Big Show and Mac Show on the same day every time. And we'll move the whole day backwards and forwards then, rather than just trying to split them across 2 days. Good story, right? Good discussion. Who's next? Who's got a story for us? Who thinks that they can blow Righty's socks off? Oh, this is good audio.
Oh, Jeff just beat me.
That's when a second sounds like an hour. Right, Jeffrey, talk us through your story.
All right. So, following the terrorist attacks in Paris and then out in San Bernardino, there are people in the U.S. government, especially our FBI director James Comey, who are making a stronger push for backdoors into encryption for all of our personal communication. And one of the things that Comey is saying is that critics, and he's talking specifically about people in the IT world and people in the journalism world, and people like us that have spoken out about this stuff too, that we need to stop talking about how this is a bad thing. And apparently, I guess he's a little butthurt about that, and thinks that we should just stop. And then he goes on to say that all of these companies that are encrypting devices and communication now weren't doing so 2 years ago, and the only reason that they're actually encrypting anything is as a marketing ploy. And I'm just finding this to be a very interesting approach to try and convince people that the encryption, that the privacy that we have been clinging to so firmly, is not something that we need at all. You know, just saying, oh, it's a marketing ploy, you don't need that.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great point. I'd never really thought of it that way, in that after Snowden came out and said, CIA have got everything, the NSA have got absolutely everything you've ever done online, that would then become the, okay, well, we can encrypt it, we can solve your problems, no one will ever see what you're saying. And that, whilst that has like a modicum of fashionable appeal to people like us, actually it's only got real benefit to people like the terrorist groups that are out there, so, which we're not going to mention because they are terrorists.
Yes, they are. And I find it very myopic that Comey still is not getting that putting a backdoor in to our encryption is a backdoor that's there for everyone and not just the FBI. He's still not wrapping his head around this.
Which is always the biggest thing I never understood when they tried to keep pushing that the need to have backdoors and access to through encryption is, you know, despite what's going on now and the terrible atrocities that are going on, you know, I don't remember encryption being built for, you know, to thwart the government. Encryption was built to preserve and people's data, because as we started moving things online and realizing that people were relying on this type of information more, a lot of corporate information is passed this way, and you need a way to encrypt it so that, you know, you don't, because corporate espionage still exists. There are still people that would love to embezzle money You know, there's a reason why phishing scams work and are still dangerous. And, you know, a lot of these corporate hacks have occurred because of phishing scams, which is essentially somebody just calling in and say, hey, I'm from your IT department and I need to reset your password. Can you give me your username and password? And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. And here it is. And all of a sudden they're in the system. So there's definitely a need for encryption. You know, unfortunately, when you have this type of technology, people can always use it for bad things as well. But in my opinion, most of these terrorists would probably be better suited or probably already using lower tech than higher tech to hide themselves.
What was the method of communication used by the terrorists in Paris?
I'm not sure because I didn't look through
that. From what I understand...
SMS.
Yeah, text messaging.
Yeah.
Just plain text messaging, completely unencrypted.
Unencrypted text messaging.
And one of the big things that you get as a problem is the guy that ditched his vest because he's a coward and then fled to Belgium. There was a news report that said police believe that they have him because they're tracking his cell phone. And I'm just sitting thinking, what the hell have you said that for? That is the stupidest thing you can possibly say because that has just been skimmed out of the window on an autobahn somewhere.
It's amazing how the press...
They're stupid. That they should be...
In an effort to be the news source now, you know, they say the stupidest things.
There was a comment when after 9/11 where they said, the CIA are hopeful of getting... more leverage on ISIS, and we have an insider who's told us that they have the satellite phone number for Osama bin Laden.
Right.
Not anymore.
Nope.
You wanker. Not anymore.
As soon as they say it, it becomes the former phone number.
Yeah, and I think there's an awful lot of misinformation, don't get me wrong, where someone says, oh, we have this, and actually they don't, and it causes someone to bolt out into the open, and then, yeah, we got you. There is good leaks and bad leaks. You know, the what's the word I'm saying? Not counter-espionage, but, you know, that kind of false...
Misinformation.
Misinformation, thank you. I don't think that was one of them. You know, we're listening to Osama bin Laden's phone calls. We've got a pretty sure what he's doing. If you want to print that as a headline on the signs tomorrow morning, don't worry about it. It'll all still be there in the morning. No. It won't.
Yep.
That's the stuff that's got to be controlled. And the fact that they want all of this access and the decryption keys, I think it should be law that decryption is allowed for specific requests from government bureaus, but that has to be with judicial oversight.
And
there has to be a special judiciary set up that reacts 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to requests from security services that says, here's the evidence that we've got, this is the reason we want to seek this person, and this person goes, yep, fine, no worries, off you go. And you can't do everyone and get everyone. That's not the way, that is not the answer to the problem that you have.
The whole problem with that is that we can no longer trust, and it's not our fault, it's their fault. We can't trust them with information anymore. Because we know, for example, they're already gathering people's data that didn't go through no type of vote with the people, right? Then they said they have a judiciary committee set up that has to review and sign off that they can continue to do this. And apparently it's never been denied. So they're basically just rubber stamping it. So what kind of review is that, you know? And so they've created this distrust of them, and now all of a sudden we're supposed to trust them because he says we should trust them, you know. And it's just, I hate the fact that they try to use fear for people to give up their privacy.
Yeah, but I think the problem that you've got as well with the Snowden leaks is the fact that if you look at what the CIA and NSA were doing, they were actually looking to people who were seriously bad people. And maybe there's a couple of people in there who weren't seriously bad people, but quickly they realized they weren't seriously bad people, so they stopped looking. And I don't disbelieve that 99.9% of the taps that were done by NSA and others were actually done not on Ma and Pa, who were sitting, rocking in their chair on the porch, making a cell phone call to their daughter saying, are you coming over Sunday? It's it's not like that. And I think that's the real problem, is that the perception of the public is the fact that they've listened to everyone say everything all the time. And they think it's
right.
You know, I mean, you go back to 1952, East Germans had voice recognition systems in 1952 that could detect keywords in telephone conversations, and lots of people, nearly everyone, was being tapped. I don't think we're in that kind of state at all. I think we've got our government is looking at specific people who they perceive to be bad. Some, nearly all, are, and some aren't, because there's an awful lot of attacks that are getting thwarted at the moment. But the perception of people is they're listening to me ring my mum up to find how long to leave the turkey in on Christmas Day and at what gas temperature it needs.
Yeah, there's definitely a disconnect in where people, and it's probably the way we talk about it, it helps with that disconnect. It's like, hey, they're gathering everything. But that, they are gathering everything, but they don't, obviously they don't care about you, me, and, other folks. But the problem is also that it's some of this information, from what I've read, has made it out to police forces. So now you got local police getting information from that's being tapped by the FBI, and then they're backfilling their case based on information they shouldn't have had in the first place. There's a whole bunch of nonsense going on with this, and as far as I'm concerned, until there's some transparency and some real oversight. No.
Got to be oversight. Always got to be judicial oversight.
Real oversight. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No way. No way.
We don't have real oversight in the United States right now for all of this data collection. There's the court that the NSA has to go to and Homeland Security has to go to get their warrants. But like someone said earlier, that's rubber stamp court. If an agency goes and says, I need the data, they just get an okay.
But I don't have a problem.
The other thing is, the court is a secret court, which to me is unfathomable in this country.
No, we have that. Hang on, because I will. Sorry, Jeff. I don't mean to interrupt people. I do apologize. But we have a court in the UK which is built as a secret court. They have oversight of that court. And it functions very, very well. There was a whole Law in Action piece on it a few months ago. And I was really impressed to hear how the guy that heads it up, he was explaining how it all worked. And it was brilliantly, brilliantly done.
We need to model ours after yours.
I'm not suggesting it's the be-all and end-all, don't get me wrong. But those kind of courts, they are well looked after. And I think, again, you look at your own, the problem that you've got is that in America, you look at, people like Scalia, who says some things which are really, really good and profound, and then other things that you just think, what the hell are you talking about? Do you get that off a cereal packet? And this wasn't like that. Well, the guy that spoke very eloquently and really sensibly about how it was administered so that privacy could be maintained, but oversight was conducted. And that's the way it has to be. But there is a problem, and my government is as bad as anyone else in this. The government wants to bypass judicial oversight, and that has to not happen. There has to be a judiciary. There has to be a legislature that are balanced against each other. Swamp Rat has the final word on this, because he says, forget Carbonite or Crash Plan. I use the NSA to back up my files.
Brilliant.
Well done, Swamp Rat.
If he does something bad, they will find out how they recover it pretty quickly.
Alan, you were next in the storyline. Good, that's a great story, Jeff. Absolutely great story. I think there's a long way to run on that, definitely. And I don't know how many politicians are being worked from behind by government agencies like dolls. Talk us through it, Alan.
Okay, so it's a great sort of clickbait heading potentially, but there's a few things I'm not sure whether people are aware that there's stuff going on around this, but the heading was, is Google setting up a mobile protection racket? This is Google Contributor is due to come to the UK in February, I believe. It's been over in the US for a little while. The idea is that people will have the option of paying money, and then publishers who are in the contributor system their certain number of ads will be replaced depending on how much the person has given, has said they're willing to pay to not see the ads. But it's also kind of hooked up with Google's advanced accelerated mobile pages project, which is kind of redefining and potentially bastardizing HTML. Oops, sorry, Ewan.
No, it's the bastardizing's a word.
The HTML to supposedly be more streamlined and mobile friendly and really focused on performance. But it's kind of this weird juxtaposition of Google kind of is setting up this service and this new standard, which the standard's allegedly open, but then the publishers need to sort of go into a Google semi-walled garden, and then Google's controlling or replacing adverts or getting us to pay to not see adverts, partly all as a sort of backlash or trying to avoid more people getting into using ad blockers. And it's kind of...
Is that the simplified version, Alan?
Yes. I know. So, another headline on the related one was Google wants to lead industry's fight back against ad blocking by bringing contributor to Europe. But
it's like I'm going to poke you in the eye. I know you've bought some safety goggles, but here's what I'm going to do so I can get back to poking you in the eye.
Yeah, so that was this one of, hang on, so isn't Google responsible for a lot of these ads, but Google's trying to put themselves as the saviour of the ad-laden web?
I don't know. Well, it's the revenue stream, isn't it? So, go on, Ray.
Well, ads are moving to apps, aren't they? Because 2015 has been the year of the ad blocker, hasn't it? AdBlock's been around for a long time, like Apple Pay. You could pay on a Google phone for a long time, and then mobile payment became famous because Apple did it. And then Apple introduced ad blockers into iOS 9, and it becomes popular. And I think a lot of people probably looked at their phones and gone, I can block ads. Oh, when I'm on my iPad or my iPhone, it's much faster now. That's lovely. Oh, actually, I can do it on my laptop as well, because, there's a lot of Google Chrome extensions that block adverts. So Google would probably look at this and go, well, the ad revenue is probably moving away from us, because I think all of us have been on the internet long enough to realize that ads are just annoying. If it's not ads for anything that you want, it's ads for something you've already bought. And we've become blinkered to them. We've become absolutely blinkered to ads. We don't... certainly with me, I don't even see them anymore. I do run ad blockers.
I've got to disagree with that. I mean, I'm in the business of creating watchable media. That is my job. People come to me and say, we've got this process, and it's a vacuum system that works on the oil system, the hydraulics oil system, and it detects a leak ahead of time. And when it does, because there's a vacuum at the top of the tank, it operates an automatic shut-off valve. And this is really cool. And I've nearly fallen asleep when they've explained it to me. And we want you to make a film about how cool this is. And I spend an entire day with them, sitting filming or chatting or working the script out with them and then shooting it. And at the end of it, I make a film that people go, wow, that's pretty cool, isn't it? And it's because I've taken the time to boil it down into what's important and what the principle is, and to focus on creating something that's a watchable and enjoyable media experience. And sometimes I get it right and sometimes I get it wrong. And that's what ad companies aren't doing, because they're lazy bastards. They think that swat the monkey or shoot the plane down is going to get people to click the ad. And okay, that worked for 2 years, but it's gone now.
And you look
MacKeeper telling people for years, selling the most horrendous piece of software via the most horrendous outlets that are possible, telling them that their computers are faulty when they aren't, have now run that out. And instead of being creative and coming up with something that would actually show what a good service they could offer, they're going to have to change their software in order to do that, then they don't. They just keep pumping out the same old crap. And that's the point. Create something that's watchable that people will like. There's a lot of YouTube videos on the 5-second click and go thing. And I put on a video, the 5-second thing comes up, and it's all right, I can click the 5-second thing, it'll be gone. And then 35 seconds later, I've watched the entire thing. And they've thought about it. They've got interesting content. They've thought about the fact that they can get me away from the 5-second click button, and then once that's gone, they can show me 30 seconds. But after 30 seconds, I'm going, hang on, I wanted to watch a video on cats falling off tin roofs. And they've made the thought process, and they've got some really watchable stuff on those 5-second clips now. And that's the problem, is that the advertising industry has got lazy because it's gone, we're going to sell you some crap that you don't want to watch, but we're going to make you watch it for a minute and a half to show you 20 seconds of Andrew Strauss making his century at Lords 5 years ago. Yeah. No, I really am not.
But is that because obviously I've just moved into a new job in design and video content is what I do. When you create a video, do you think about that 5-second Google skip when you start your video now? If it's going to YouTube, do you think I've got to capture everyone in that first 5 seconds?
I would do if I didn't have a captive audience a bit more than I currently do. But I've got some videos that are short and they are designed to be punchy. I mean, I did one last night for a thing, and it was some people. There's two guys leaving from a firm, and I went and filmed secretly at their location last week, and it was people pulled into the room where I was saying, I like this person because of this, I like that person, that. And then one of the girls was like, what do I want to do? And I said, don't tell what you like about this person. Tell me everything that annoys you about this person. So she was like the counterpoint as we went through the video. And then there was another girl who was the PA to the main guy who was leaving. And all she was throughout the whole thing was someone going, what do I like about John? And I've got her pacing up and down the room. And she comes in every sort of fifth clip. And then right at the end, she sits there and she goes, I got nothing. And it was,
that's awesome,
infinitely watchable, because people knew them. It was easier, it was slightly more captive audience. But straight away when she sits there and goes, what do I love about John, that's it. You're gonna watch the rest now.
Exactly.
And so I do think of that, yes, I do think of that an awful lot, but it's important to do that. And there was another guy I spoke to last night, and he said, we've got a real problem at the moment with people not doing their shoelaces up on their boots, and we've got a few serious ankle injuries. And I want to make a film about this guy who has his boots up and has a great day, and the guy who doesn't have his boots up and he doesn't have a great day. And one goes out and he has a great day, and the other one goes out and he breaks his ankle, and we'll do him falling over on camera. I'm like, oh, no, man, don't do that. Because everyone will look at it and go, oh, what an arse. I would never do that. Even if they sat there with their boots undone, they would still think they never did that. And he said, well, the other day, he said, it's a serious problem. We went into the canteen. I got one of the boys and I said, right, let's go round now at random and get people to lift their trouser legs up and see what their boots are. And I said, that's the film. That's the film we should be making. It should be Anthea, what's her name, that used to, not Anthea, who's the girl that used to do Treasure Hunt with the fat arse?
Annika Rice.
It should be an Annika Rice movie where you run into the canteen with me following with the camera, all sudden, nothing prepared, show me your boots, lift your trouser legs up, and do a little fun bit of walking around the canteen, taking the piss out of guys who lift their trouser legs up and they've got the laces undone.
Yeah.
That's the film we should be making. Oh, yeah, I like that.
I like that too. You should like do this for a living, Ewan, and this is really good.
Bat Wedge nearly said Wincy Willis. No, she did the weather, mate. Nearly, she
the
said.
Fact that Google's even stepping into this and actually championing this, I wonder if they're starting to feel the pressure from more and more people running ad block.
Well, I think an interesting stat I came across related to this story was they were saying apparently it's got to 1 in 10 blocking ads in the US and the UK. But it's up to 1 in 4 people run ad blockers in France and Germany. That's a hell of 25% is.
That's a lot.
That's a lot, isn't it? Whereas, you know, I mean, 1 in 10 is worrying enough, 10%, but 25%? And, you know, that's of an average population running ad blockers?
I think the one thing that, I mean, I've had a conversation with a guy many years ago about the difference between advertising and marketing. And the one thing I said to him is, advertising is, here's what I've got. Click here if you want it. Whereas marketing is, here's what I've got. I know you don't want it, but I want to make you click here. It's selling something to someone that they don't want or need and have no perception of requirement. You have to make that. You have to create that desire. You have to hit the thing that resonates with them that makes them want to click your ad. And that's where advertising agencies, at times, can just be lazy bastards, because that's what Google, that article, that whole article you put there, Alan, good conversation, but actually that's to a certain degree Google going, here's the lazy route out.
Yeah.
We'll just force people to do what we want them to do, which is what the 1.5 minute ad on YouTube is. It's lazy people doing lazy advertising, not bothering to try and grab people and sell them something that they don't want or need. Poor marketing.
Yep.
Well said, sir.
I didn't mean to kill the conversation there, sorry, fellas.
No. Well said.
Last story, Chris, you have it. The floor is yours, mate. What is the story? What do you want to tell us?
Well, I don't know if mine's so much of a story. I got a part of a story, but a couple of weeks ago, I did purchase my Windows Phone 10, my Lumia 950 device, and I figured I would just take this opportunity to talk about it with everybody. So far, I got the XL. So there's two sizes. There's the regular, which is the 5-inch, and the XL, which I think is a 5.7, obviously much smaller than the 1520. But it's a really nice feeling in your hand. It's got some heft to it, but not overly hefty where you're like, okay, it's heavy. I think they did a good job with the build quality, even though it's nothing overly amazing about the way it looks. Relatively thin. Camera is freaking phenomenal. They just nailed it again with the camera. And I'm not a camera dude, so I'm not speaking from the aperture and No, I'm not doing that. I'm just saying, as a regular guy who can sit in his seat and take a picture from across the stadium and blow it up a little bit and be happy at the game, the camera looks great, as well as the screen on this thing.
Is that the XL, Chris?
Yes, it is. Yeah. So,
Lewis Hamilton, who's F1 Formula World Champion, Formula One F1 World Champion, sent a picture out of him taking a selfie of him with some people. And he was holding out a phone. It had a big BlackBerry symbol on the back. And when I looked at it, I did like a double take, and I was like, that's a 950. That's not a BlackBerry. That's a BlackBerry sticker on a 950. I'm sure of it. But I couldn't. I looked at it closer, but because it's a bit nondescript, isn't it? The back, if you've put the sticker in the right place and covered it up, you can't really tell for sure.
The main thing is try and see whether you can see the triple LED flash.
Yeah.
Rather than, because most other ones obviously only have single or double.
Yeah, flash, definitely has a triple.
So the big question: have you done the continuum thing yet? Have you done? Have you plugged it into a mouse and a keyboard? Not.
Because I ordered my device as soon as I could, and then everybody was like, oh, you can get the little continuum dock.
Yeah.
The only way you could get it was through the Microsoft deals thing. And I was like, I'm not undoing my order to get my phone day one just so I can get that dock. So I haven't had a chance to go out and grab the dock yet. But I haven't had a chance to play with that yet. But there are some
cool I think you might still be eligible. I'm sure if you look at the Microsoft thing, it was talking about you download an app which validates that you have a 950 XL, and then you go and go through a process there. So have a look on the Microsoft.
Yeah, it's the deal. Oh yeah, I guess I could. I guess they.
It didn't say you had to buy it from them.
Yeah.
No, because when I got my first Windows phone, the Fitbit I'm wearing now, you download an app and it then said you've got the right phone eligible for the deal, and it then sent me a Fitbit, so you probably could do that again.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I'll let you guys know how it works out. But there are some cool. First off, the bad. When you get the phone initially, the operating system is clearly not done. And I think a lot of people expected that, like at least for myself and the people that were probably interested in grabbing this phone, the operating system is not done. It got some hangs and some lockups. You know, it doesn't matter. It's happened in Internet Explorer. I mean, Edge happened in WhatsApp, it's just very apparent to me, but not enough to where you're like, okay, I got to throw this thing through a wall. So there's definitely that aspect of it.
How does the camera hold up, Chris? Because I mean, I had the 1020. Did you have a 1020?
Yes.
So how does the camera hold up in terms of images compared to the 1020? Because the 1020, I mean, Ellis complains. He's, oh, I want an iPhone 4. Can I have the iPhone 4 that's in your cupboard? Dude, you've got my old 1020. There are images that have come off that camera that were published in the London Evening Standard. You know, that's a celebrity camera you have in front of you, boy. And he said, no, I really want an iPhone 4. I feel like slapping him sometimes. But
from my limited...
No, that'll do.
Yes. I think it's just as well as the 1020. Now, there was a test that was a guy who did some strong comparisons between the 950, the 1020, and the, I think it was the 830 Windows phones. And in all his tests, I mean, everything was neck and neck with the 1020 and the 950.
Does it do a DNG output?
Sorry?
Can you still get the DNG output from that? The digital output?
Yeah, I don't think they took that out.
Yeah, no, you can. And it does 4K video.
That's massive then. Yeah. That really is good.
Yep.
See, I might be gone from iPhone soon.
Supposedly it is between 10 and 20% better than the camera on the 930. Because it's similar, but it was, supposedly all the internals were re-engineered. So although it's a 20 megapixel like the 930 is, supposedly they have managed to push it even further.
Right.
And the 930 was, you know, an excellent one. I'm probably being, as obviously a known Microsoft fanboy, or certainly a lot of users, I have to say I'm going to be a little bit controversial in that I'm probably actually going to switch from my 1020 to a 930 rather than actually go all the way to the 950.
Well, that's not a camera choice then, because my wife's got the 930 and it's nowhere near as good.
The 1020, as I say, it's an amazing camera. I've really enjoyed it and stuff, but I think since the latest Denim update and stuff, the things that the 930 camera can do, and in terms of the speed, the 1020 is still going to be, is the closest you're going to get to a DSLR in a smartphone, I think. The 950 is probably going to come close, but the 930 just has the flexibility and the features and the speed that I'm really starting to sort of miss on my 1020, which is starting to feel, you know...
faded.
Yeah, which just because, you know, because it was such a specialist device, it's not getting the continued software update love that the 930 will get, and obviously the 950 will get. But I'm a bit sad about that. On the other hand, you know, you're just going, if the 930 has got a lot of the features or a lot of the benefits of the 950, okay, you don't get Continuum, but I don't think realistically I'm going to do much with Continuum. Okay, it hasn't got the retina scanning sign in, but I can live with a PIN code.
So let me talk to you about that for a second. This is one of the things I wanted to bring up. So one of the features on the 950 is the ability to sign in with your retina, and essentially you hold the phone up when you're on the screen, it'll tell you if you need to move closer, and then it'll recognize your iris and sign you into the phone.
Dude, if you've had a drink, that's got so many lines written into it. You stood there with your phone up to your eye, with it pulling backwards and forwards, mate, like you're trying to focus on it.
Going to jail.
With a beer in the other hand.
That's just awesome.
You could you imagine a traffic stop, can't you? And the cop gets you out and he said, I forgot my license. And he goes, okay, I'm around the corner. My wife could bring it around. Can I just call her? Yeah, fine. And you stood there with your phone going backwards and forwards, in and out from your retina, trying to get it. And like, no, officer, I'm not drunk. It's the phone. It unlocks with my retina, honest.
I think as you use it more, start to learn, like you can almost get pretty close to where it needs to be. It does have a safety feature built in. And if it has too many attempts, it'll just tell you, hey, I couldn't recognize you. You need to put a
pin. It senses the presence of cops.
Right. It's Popo behind the corner. It's Popo who fly the birds. So, but The feature's pretty cool though, but I'm gonna give Apple a thumbs up on the thumbprint reader. I think is probably more practical.
Yeah, I miss that. I've got an iPad Air and I miss that terribly. The number of times I sit there with my thumb over the home button going, come on.
Apple has done a really good job.
I'll tell you where this... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
Nope, that's it. It's all you.
the one... It's something that you're probably not going to use terribly a lot, but I tell you what, I was at the game. It was absolutely freezing outside. I did not want to take my gloves off. And the cool piece of being able to pick up my phone and unlock it with my face was enough said right there. That there are use cases where that will come in handy to you. So it's an awesome feature to have on the phone. Now, one of the cool things that we just found out yesterday, and I posted the link to it, was that Microsoft, so people on the insider program started getting the latest build, which pretty much is going to be the Windows Phone, the completed Windows Phone 10 build, which was had 129 at the end of it with the build number. And folks were amazed that the very next day, regular devices, people not on the program, were getting the update. And so people were wondering, what the heck is going on? How did, you know, it wasn't anything big in the update, so it wasn't that part wasn't very exciting. But the fact that Microsoft was pushing out an update to phones where you didn't have to wait 3-4 weeks, a month, 2 months for the carrier to approve it before it came out. And then the guys over at Windows Central wrote a nice report that explained what exactly happened. And so essentially what Microsoft was able to do was separate the radio stack from the other communication stacks on the phone. And the radio stack is the only thing that the carriers are concerned with. And it was the number one excuse they used why they had to test everything, because if you have a device that's going through, you know, anything you do that affects our stack, that affects our network, we have a right to see, hold up, and, you know, and test forever until we approve it. But now with that piece separated, anything they do on the OS doesn't affect the stack. And so now Microsoft is able to push out updates directly to devices without having to go through the carrier. Now, I don't know.
That's a beautiful thing.
Isn't that pretty cool?
Thank God.
Yeah. I mean, it has driven me nuts for years that the only phones that have easy updates where you're not shackled to the carrier has been the iPhone. And it just seems stupid to me that we don't, that we weren't seeing this on Windows phones and Android phones too. So this makes me smile. I'm really glad to see that Microsoft has figured out a way that they can push out these updates without being tied down by the carriers. That's an awesome thing.
So I thought that was pretty cool. So yep. Other than that, you know, the OS pretty much runs the same. The you know, it's been some revamped in the user interface, but everything else is pretty much the same, look and feel wise. A couple little tweaks here and there. But overall, man, it's a pretty solid phone, and I'm enjoying it. But that's my story.
Comments from the chat room. I've got to find Batwench's because it's well worth reading it. According to Mr. Batwench, the BlackBerry has a similar camera low-key thing to the 950. And, of course, knowing Batwench's obsession with Tom Hiddleston, that may be a bit of a Freudian thing there. Mr. Batwench, you're in tonight, mate. You just have to put a big mask on and carry your big staff. What else was there? Mr. Batwitch has given us a photo of the Grapes pub in the Slack room, but unfortunately it's compressed to hell, so we can't tell. But I said, is it a RAW or a DNG file? It's got RAW written on it, but he's confirmed it is a DNG file. It's not a true RAW file. There was another one I was going to say. Ewan, doesn't your wife have an 820 or is she upgraded? She upgraded. She took a very different upgrade path to everyone else in dropping it down the toilet. And just to be sure we couldn't put it in a bag of rice and dry it out afterwards, she smashed the screen on the toilet bowl before it went in the water. So she has a 1020 now as well, and she loves it. She absolutely adores it.
Man, physics is not forgiving.
No, it's not. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They are unbelievable. You're sitting there going, well, I'm watching the video now. How the hell are UK2 unbelievable? You wouldn't be watching it without them. They pick up all the bandwidth. They pick up all the website charges. The server that we have off them would cost us over £500 a month. There is 4 terabytes. Yes, you heard me. 4 terabytes of video and audio on there that you can listen to. They also power the output of all of the random files that go to the NQN channel. So if we're not live and we're not broadcasting live, if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/live and you click on that, you can then press play on the live player and you will get an NQL show. NQL stands for not quite live. And every time BTN publishes a new NQL show to watch, there's a tweet goes out with the hashtag in uppercase, hashtag BTNNQL, and you just sit and watch it. There you go. And there's some absolute treasures from the past. I looked at the one today that was just before we went on air, Alan and I were talking about it, was the Mac show that we did just before the bash this year. And Don cutting the tape for the official opening of BTN Prime HQ, and it was absolutely brilliant to go back and just kind of reminisce about that kind of stuff. It was really cool. And that's all thanks to UK2. So please support them. There's offer codes at britishnetwork.com/sponsors, and if you want to just sign into your account and give us the kudos for the fact that we were the original people that sent you, then just go to britishnetwork.com/UK2 and you're in. I read out some things today as well. I wanted to read out our Patreon heroes, and I read out 3 from the top of the pile, which were Billy Zilla, Michael Collis and Jufro Jim, who are our 3 leading subscribers, contributors in Patreon, our biggest bosses, our patrons. Going down the list, we've got Alex McQuilkin, who also gives us $15 a month, and his contribution over the last year or so has been $210. Thank you very much, mate. Darren Rowley gives us $15 a month, and his contribution is £245. Thank you, mate. And Andy Vaughan, and now this annoys me greatly, because Andy Vaughan is the person who does all the cool stuff like the NQN channel for us. And he's also doing a stats counter that works, and he's also doing a whole pile of other stuff, and we've got something else coming which is going to be super cool in the new year, and Andy's down and doing that, and the bugger still gives us $10 a month.
And man, love him.
He gives us so much time and free support to Wheaters. Wheaters and Shads have absolutely transformed the back end. There is tons of stuff going on that's absolutely uber cool. And we couldn't do it without. We're gathering stats now properly off the servers. We've also got live stats from the live shows. We've got a review gathering system as well that Wheaters has written in the back end, and it's just superb. So, Andy, you're naughty, mate. And beneath Andy, one of our other Patreon heroes, is Batwinch. Batwinch has given us $10 a month, and she's given us $138 so far. Thank you very much. And if you can't do the math on that, it's because she's upped her contribution as she's gone on. That's why it doesn't kind of work out. She's been contributing for 13.8 months. If you support us on Patreon, we thank you so much. It's been great. We're doing more Patreon heroes as we go through. We're going to go down the list over the next couple of weeks. We did 3 on the Mac show, and we've done 4 there today now. One thing I would say is that people have kind of said to me, so what do you do with Patreon? It buys Righty's Light. It buys another couple of lights for Wheaters Studio up in the north side. If we've got another couple of lights that need to go up here in the table legs, it comes out of those and it does that stuff. The idea is not to have Patreon so that we drink it when the bash comes around, or that we stick it up our noses because we're drug addicts. Every penny that comes in from Patreon stays in the Patreon account, and it's used to buy stuff that is purely for BTN, something purely that helps us do the shows, nothing else. It's not something that we use for ourselves at all. It doesn't buy my camera gear to go out on site and do work. It just provides stuff for the shows. And if you want to know what the accounts are, I'd gladly tell anyone. Just write to me and ring me up, and I'll tell you exactly where the money goes from each of them. Also, I would suggest, please be careful, because I know that Muller's had this, that's what the reason I know it, with the Patreon scare about them losing data, and they really didn't lose an awful lot of data. It wasn't anything to worry about. But his credit card firm has said, oh, you can't go to Patreon anymore. No, we've cancelled that. And they've cancelled the contribution as a result. And I think we've gone down the last couple of months. We've had a steady decline in the amount of respondents. And I know that PayPal does the same thing. They kind of unsubscribe you, and then you have to resubscribe. And if you don't notice that it's happened, you can find out that you've stopped subscribing to us on Patreon. please just double check your subscription. If you would like to support Beta, just check that you're still giving it, because there's quite a few people have dropped off in the last few months. Anything that you've given us over history or currently, thank you very much. Every dollar that you give us goes towards BTN and helps keep us on the air. It's nothing more than that. So thanks to all our Patreon heroes, which is all 100 and whatever it is of them. Very much appreciated. Time for the cool things. Starts off Chris Ashley.
My cool thing is pretty simple. It's in America. You guys have OnStar out there?
Do we have what?
OnStar.
No, what's OnStar?
Okay. So OnStar is a system that comes pre-installed in Chevy vehicles. I believe it's in some Ford as well. Now they start to come out with aftermarket systems that you can, and it basically, it's like a, I'll think of them as a phone company, but for your vehicle. But like, let's say you lock your keys in the car, you can call OnStar and they can unlock your car remotely.
Remotely?
Yeah. Let's say somebody steals your car. They can track your car, lock the doors, report the location of the vehicle. You know, so it's a pretty cool service that's been around for quite some time here in the States. Surprisingly, not out there. And of course, with the with time and technology, they've created mobile apps. And the OnStar mobile app is just so awesome. They have it on every platform: Windows Phone, iPhone, Android. And the mobile app allows you to wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, grab your phone, and start your car. And if you live in a cold air, it's pretty nice to get out to your vehicle and it's already warm before you even took a shower yet.
Oh, yeah. Is your vehicle secure, though? If someone breaks the window, does the alarm system know it doesn't?
Yeah. It knows if you've been in an accident. So,
no, but if you're in the shower and you think, I'll start my heater in my car, and your car's out on the driveway, if someone smashes the window, can they still hit your car, or does the alarm still work and they mobilize the doors and stuff?
The doors, well, first off, in order to remotely start the car, the first thing you have to do is lock the car. So it makes you lock it. Now, if they smash the windows, if they try to turn the ignition, even though there's no key in there, it actually shuts the car off. So I've actually, like, bumped into the ignition before, and I guess it detected that. I don't know if it detects the broken glass. But they cannot drive the car at all. They can't drive the vehicle at all.
Okay, that's cool. Very good.
So it's a... the app also allows you to check your tire pressures, check your how much fuel is in the vehicle. It's just a really cool and very convenient feature of the vehicle. And pretty much it's like my standard now. When I buy a car, I need OnStar in it. If you want, you could, do like a prepaid card thing, and you can actually make phone calls with it as well from the vehicle. I think if you're on Verizon, you can actually add it to your plan. But the mobile app is what's really cool, because like on a game last week where it's freezing outside, I whip up my phone, start my truck when I'm walking back towards the truck, and it's already heating up before I even get there. So it's just nice. The coolest thing to be able to remotely start. Or sometimes my buddy who I go to the game with every week will beat me to the truck because his seats are a little bit different than mine, and I can remotely unlock the vehicle for him so he's not sitting outside. Just those type of cool things. If you have multiple vehicles, you can control each vehicle with the same app. It's just a really cool feature. So if it's something that you have on your vehicle and you haven't taken advantage of, check out OnStar, the mobile application on your platform.
Righty's referencing Die Hard 4 and asking if that's the thing that's on the car in Die Hard 4.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. I think I do remember, that it was sort of the...
They do something, don't they?
It was, saying it was trying to be helpful in a rather extreme situation.
That's it.
Jeffrey, what do you have for us, sir?
I have... Hold on, I forgot to pull them out of the case because, I was so prepared today. All right, I have a set of headphones today.
All right.
Here we go. Okay. These headphones are from PAW, which is PAWW. And it's the WaveSound 2. So they're Bluetooth with noise canceling that you can turn on or off. And then also a regular headphone jack. So you can just plug them into an audio out port and use them as standard headphones if you want. So USB port right here for charging, and the audio on these is really nice. Now, I'm not wearing them right now because these are designed for listening to music and watching movies, and not for recording shows, which is why I'm using pro monitors right now as opposed to these. But they're comfy, and I really like the sound. And what I did was I paired them to my Apple TV so that I can watch movies and TV shows as loud as I want and be able to actually understand all the dialogue any time of day and not upset my my neighbors, because maybe they don't want to hear me watching Star Wars Clone Wars yet again. So they come with a nice little carrying case that zips up. And inside the case, you also have charging cable, headphone splitters, and a regular 3.5 millimeter jack cable. So it has everything you need to get up and running. And they used to cost $250, but now they're $200. So they're $50 cheaper than they used to be.
Oh, blimey. Not cheap then.
Not cheap, but you're getting what you're paying for.
Yeah, no, I like the you can put an audio jack in, because that's one of the things that really pisses me off about a lot of Bluetooth stuff that you get. When you get it in, it's like if I run out of battery power halfway home, the thing stops working. I can't plug it in and continue to use it.
Right.
It's rubbish. Absolutely rubbish. I've got a set of Weta's told me to buy them, and they are great. They're the ones that wrap around the back of your head and just come in, and they've got like a loose loop that hangs back. I can't remember what they're called, Plantronics, I think. And when we were in Macworld last year, year before, he said, oh, those are great. I've got a pair of them. They're brilliant. And then I bought them, and he said, only bad thing is if the battery runs out, then that's it. There's nothing you can do. You can't plug a power supply in and they start working. You can't plug a jack in and they start working. You've just lost them until you've recharged them.
So. Yeah, that totally sucks.
But the $20 ones that I used them the other day, Rich Harkness recommended some $20 ones a little while ago, and I said the quality out of them was excellent. But one of the things that was cool on those was that it had a plug-in. I was quite surprised at that. I thought for $20 it's going to be really limited, but actually they got a plug-in as well. So that's top feature. If you've got a link, Jeff, you have already done it. There we go. Alan, what are you?
Okay, so mine's actually, I was going to do a deal and then maybe a quick cool thing. So my deal is a Microsoft Band version 1.
They're way down, aren't they?
So Black Friday, managed to pick one of them up for £55 instead of £179. Wow. And sort of also managed to get a second one for the wife for sort of 67. You're going to have a hard time tracking them down, but allegedly Argos is still selling them at half price for £80, which, given that the Band 1 is only missing sort of, okay, the Band 2 is a lot nicer in terms of the sort of roundedness, and but it's only got one more sensor. Yes, it's got a nicer screen and things like that.
Band 1's awesome.
Band 1 is, you know, it's a great piece of kit.
And it works with iPhone.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone. And, you know, for less than 100 quid for something that can do the sleep tracking, the exercise tracking, you know, continuous heart rate and all that lot, I just thought it's a deal that I needed to sort of, you know, just because the Band 2's come out, there's some really good prices on Band 1 at the moment. So I'd keep an eye out. I imagine people who took advantage of the deal price for Black Friday, you might find quite a lot of brand new ones coming on the market on eBay. So, you know, if you can't find them at, you know, they've already pretty much sold out of Amazon, Microsoft Store, Currys. Argos has got certain sizes in still, I believe. But otherwise, you know, definitely working, you know, because you and I believe you said, you know, you thought it was worthwhile at its original price. So, you know, at under 100 quid, maybe 80 quid.
I bought one for Sharon for her to go with her phone, and she loves having it.
Okay. Well, I'd say the Batwench has already gone and put that link in. My cool thing, if I can sneak it in quick, is actually, have you heard of Player Piano, who I have been following for a while? They've just recently done an awesome Star Wars medley, but it is this very talented pianist, musician, but they go to town and, I mean, she's a stunning pianist, but they do sort of complete themed videos. And now the Star Wars one, she's got Star Wars themed pianos and she's in various Star Wars related outfits, but previously has done an awesome Game of Thrones one, Doctor Who, Akira, Nintendo, Walking Dead, and more. So, you know.
Oh my god, she's playing a Millennium Falcon piano.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Yes.
a slightly shot up Millennium Falcon piano. And as I say, an R2-D2 piano and a very sort of Sith style piano with red lighting all around and stuff. She's incredibly talented, and the videos from Player Piano are just awesome.
She's got 24 ones. Fingers on each hand. She has to have.
Wow. Yes, I think so. So if you haven't checked that out yet, YouTube and Player Piano.
Excellent.
Okay.
That's a beautiful piano she's got there. It's illuminated at the front as well for the drives, yeah. Or the back. Yeah. Very good. Very, very good. Righty boy, what do you have?
I've got a TV show that was out this week in the UK, and obviously in the States, VPN, you can get it. It was called That's So Last Century. I don't know if you saw it. It was on Tuesday night over here on Channel 4. I'll drop the link in to the chat room. But it was just, I stayed up, wife went to bed and I stayed and watched it. But it's just one of those kind of Channel 4 things where they talk about stuff. But they talk about old tech, and it was various celebrities, and they were with their children. And they were showing all the tech that they had when they were young. So ZX Spectrums and brick mobile phones. And it was just them talking to their kids and like giving them like a 1980s mobile phone and going, well, how do you send an SMS on this? And it was just a really good kind of nostalgia TV show. It's on catch up, so you can go and watch it again. But it's got Vic Reeves and a few other really cool people in there. But just a really interesting program to see how kids of the 21st century look at, you know, try and use tech from the 20th century. Really good and really enjoyable.
Excellent. Really good. I'm absolutely gutted because I can't find mine.
Oh.
I can't find a link for it. Hang on a second. So. No. I was going to show you the link just to the application on the apps store. But I can't, because I can't find it. But ironically, I picked a piano-based application as well for fun. And it really is, I've deliberately not picked the iPad Pro, because it's great and everything, but it's kind of a bit of a trite pick. So I've tried to pick things that have made the iPad Pro really worthwhile having. The one thing that I have got is Piano 3D, and I've subscribed to it and paid for it. It is superb. So basically, you take your iPad Pro and you sit it on your piano like it's a piece of sheet music, and there's tutorials on how to play various pieces of music, and you see there the keys depress like a piano roll.
That's really
good. You don't need to know the sheet music.
And you can vary the speed on it so that you can play along. And for someone like me who's dyslexic, the last thing I need is a piece of sheet music. I struggled enough learning
your
the piano.
Your music might sound really, really cool, Ewan.
Well, no, I did play the piano to grade 5. But I struggled. I really struggled with the... A lot of the pieces that I had, I used to get wrapped across the knuckles by my... by my piano teacher saying, you're not reading the music, you're playing that from memory. Yeah, that's because I sat there for hours learning how to play it so I could play it from memory so that I didn't have to look at the music, because looking at the music's friggin' painful, woman. but I didn't find that out till I was 42. So, when I was diagnosed as dyslexic, but I love playing the piano. I have a piano at home. I sit and tinkle on it on a regular basis, but I can't read music for the sake of my life, and I'm out of practice as well as, and also I found it a very difficult experience when I was doing it as a thing. But piano 3D is something that's really has helped me, and it's 50% off at the moment for the library of stuff in there. They give you about a dozen free tracks, excuse me, through modern stuff, classical stuff, and some operatic-y type stuff. But it's $14.99 for a lifetime subscription, and it's 50% off at the moment. So. And there's Adele on there. There's tons of really cool tracks on there. Skyfall. They've got the new Sam. What's it one from the James Bond film Spectre? And they show you how to play it. And I say you can change the speed and you can pause it and you can stop it and start it and work out the chords for yourself as you go. Rewind. Go backwards and forwards.
Any Busta Rhymes on there?
I doubt it. I don't remember him as being piano based. I have to say, Chris. To be fair.
No, I'm just kidding.
I bet there's a bit of 50 Cent somewhere. Deep Pan says, which piano keyboard do I have? I have a Roland piano, and it's a proper 88 wooden piano at home that I sit and play. It's good. I'm not very good, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I haven't played from music for years, and all I've got is pieces that I remember how to play, and I sit down periodically with the piano, and it's just kind of like, what's the next chord? I can't remember what the next chord is. I'm bloody useless. But the thing is, what's interestingly is that that's inversely proportional to the amount of Jack Daniels I've drunk. I've noticed.
Totally makes sense.
And Sharon's actually said this. She said, the more you drink, the better your piano playing gets. Because I don't think. I just sit and play. I'm off.
Magic fingers. Let muscle memory take over.
Nice says, Deep Pan, I used to have a Korg T1 many years ago.
Oh, nice.
No, this is a proper wooden piano. It's none of you. I used to have a DX7. I used to love that. I wish I'd never sold that. That was superb. Excellent. Where can we get a hold of you, Chris?
You can always find me recording with my homeboys over at the SMR podcast. You know, we have a good time over there, much like over here, talking about tech. But really getting more into talking about social things that are going on as well. Definitely touching on race issues and our perspective on it. So it's a lot of fun. And we always keep the show funny. So check us out over there at smrpodcast.com. And, of course, you can always catch me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley.
Because, yeah, talking about race and religion is always a barrel of laughs.
Well, you know, you got to make it laugh. You got to make it funny.
Jeff, where are you, man?
I'm hanging out over at macobserver.com with a bunch of other awesome writers. And you can find me on Twitter. That would be Jay Gamut. Same thing on Instagram. I'm posting the Lego Star Wars Advent Calendar every day. So check that out.
Yeah.
And interestingly, on every podcast.
Just interestingly, I've been watching your tweets, and Ellis gets the same pieces as you. It's the same advent calendar.
That's awesome.
It is. Across the pond and a few sets of mountains as well.
I feel a little closer to Ellis now. That's totally cool.
Super. Where are you, Mr. Hauschel?
Best place to find me is on Twitter at Digital Amoeba. One word.
I've just got a message back from Muller. I've just said to him, where's the... where's your glimpse that we can show on screen? He's got no bandwidth, so he must be fairly close, right?
Yeah, I know. Outside.
And he's put some crap jokes in. Jesus, I've got to stop him doing crap jokes. And Righty Boy, where are you, sir?
Well, you used to be able to find me at Portland on Twitter, but you'll find me in the BTN Slack room from now on in.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
It's good. I only joined this week. I know I probably should have done it sooner, but it's great in there.
It is. The Slack room, if you want to join the Slack room, just send me an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and say, please, can I get in the Slack room? And I'll give you an invitation. There are a few conditions. There's no religion. There is no politics. It's just tech and geeky talk. And
I'm out.
There's no... There's no really bad swear words in there, please. And that's it, really. That's pretty much. We'll make the rules up as we go along. But we've got 40 odd people in there at the moment, and it's the conversations are awesome, absolutely awesome. I haven't checked Twitter that much, and I've got to say, before we did the show, I was sitting tweeting out about here's the big show, here's who's on, and that kind of stuff. And I just started scrolling through the tweets, and all they did was piss me off. And I was like, no. Don't look at it. Just switch it off. And I switched it off and I went back into the Slack room. And yep. I think people that follow me are probably happier that I'm not tweeting as well. So we're in the Slack room. We're shooting the shit in there and we're having a great time doing it. If you want to join us, we've also got a photo show room in the Slack channel as well. So when you join the Slack room, you can join. It's a public room, so you can join the photo show chat room. And I'm not sure how we're going to do this, but maybe we might be able to crowdsource the information for the photo show. So I actually get back to doing the photo show, because one of the problems I've got is it's an entire day of prep to do one photo show that lasts 45 minutes. So I need a bit of help, if you like, doing that. So maybe we can do that. But we're also, even if we don't do that, we're going to post photos that we've taken during the day. I've posted a few up the other day of some of the work that I do. And we're going to do an assignment every month. We'll get back to doing photo assignments. There's only 7 or 8 people in there at the moment, so we need to swell the numbers on that as well. But you can join the Slack room, and you don't have to take part. If you don't want to join in and watch the Slack room, you don't have to. But you can join the Slack room, and then by default go into the photo show room, and then you can just use the photo show room if that's what you want. So it's fine. It's great. BritishNetwork.com, BritishNetwork@gmail.com, and I'll ask me for an invite, and I'll let you in, and we can sit and shoot the breeze. It's good fun, I got to say. Really good fun. Jeff, you're already in there, aren't you?
Send me an invite. No, I'm not in there.
No, you've definitely got an invite. All of the guests originally got an invite to Slack. Yeah, that's what Wrighty's problem was. He had the invitation, but he'd never signed up.
I'll go back and look in my...
Yeah, have a look. Chris, you're in there as well.
Email.
Definitely.
Yeah, I got to give you a different email address.
And Alan.
Used for us. Like, that was my problem.
Just send me an email and I'll send you an invitation. Alan, you were definitely invited as well, but
okay.
It's good. It's an alternative to Twitter for us, and I think the one thing that's bad about it is you wake up in the morning and there's 35 entries already, and you have to scroll back through and see what's going on, which you don't do with Twitter so much. But
everyone gets up so early.
I'm getting used to that. No, I've put my Slack. Getting everyone in the Slack room is what's got me to work out how to use Do Not Disturb on my iPhone.
I really wish they would add the ability for people to request a sign up instead of you having to.
No, you just send me an email and I send you the
Oh, I know, but I would wish they could just go to the Slack page, because we started setting up one as well, but it's not conducive for that use case yet.
Yeah.
Even though you can get it to work, of course. Yeah. I just wish they would just flip that one little feature.
That'd be good. Right, we've done you, haven't we? Because we can get you out the Slack room, because you've left Twitter as well now. Bleeding and crying. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, but not very often anymore because I'm in the Slack room as well. We'll be back again next week. I think we'll go back to Thursday and Friday next week as normal, but I won't be here doing the show. It'll be Santa, because it'll be the Christmas quiz. So, ho, 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 everybody. Yes. Thanks for listening.